Hi, I'm Sam.
And I'm Phoebe.
And welcome to the third episode of the CBM podcast.
This episode, we talked to my grandpa, Brother Michael Owen, about his experience in the CBM. He's been all over the place. He's been to Europe. He's been to various places in Africa, the Caribbean. And he gave us some really helpful advice on preparing for a trip and dealing with cultural differences, what to do when things go wrong. We had a great time talking to him, and we hope you enjoy it too.
So, question number one, how did you get involved with the CBM?
Okay, well, I've always enjoyed going overseas and overseas adventure sort of thing. But obviously, when the children are growing up, that's your mum and aunt and so on. You know, priority was to be at home. But once they were sort of in their late teens, and in fact I was able to take early retirement from my full-time post, then the opportunity came along. And just at that point, there was a sister in our meeting in Devon who was a correspondent, a tutor for people in Tanzania. And she knew they were looking for people to go out there. And she said to me, "Would you, you know, what about going?" And I thought, great, you know, I'd like to go to Tanzania. And that's how I got involved with Tanzania. And then a bit later on, I met Brother Ernest Beatty, who came to a fraternal at Seaton where we were. And he was looking for somebody to get started in Hungary. So there were one or two Esperanto contacts in Hungary, but apart from that, there'd been no preaching work done particularly. So that's how I got involved with Europe. The rest is just simply being asked to go to the Caribbean to help with things going on there, and a little bit of involvement with when you were in Panama with your parents, and in Bolivia, obviously I came out there, so that gave a little bit of exposure as well. So, you know, one way or the other, I got involved with various things and people asked, like going to Ethiopia is because we knew John and Janet Shamwell, they were looking for somebody to go to Ethiopia. So we both Rishman and I did a few trips to Ethiopia, which was a fascinating place to go to. Yeah.
Cool.
What's your best story from one of the places that you've been to, Michael?
I think probably the story I most often recount is when I was with Rishmore in Trinidad and Tobago. And when we were in Trinidad, there was a brother who's still in prison. He was in prison for murder, which was before he ever discovered the truth. And when he was in prison on death row, he'd come across some advertising for a correspondence course, done the correspondence course, got sufficiently involved. The local brethren and sisters in Trinidad sort of made contact with him. And the prison governor at the time was quite helpful and allowed them to baptize him in the prison and to sort of meet him fairly regularly. Well, when we were there, they asked us if we'd go and see him. And that was quite an experience because we sat in this prison sort of entranceway, which was fairly open. We were the only white people there. It was very crowded. There's a lot of noise, a lot of activity going on. Most of the other visitors had plastic bags, I remember, with fruit in, which they had to take up to a prison officer who cut it open with a machete to make sure there was no hidden objects inside, sort of thing. And there was a tremendous amount of shouting in an adjoining room. And then it would suddenly go very quiet. And then after a few minutes, another lot of shouting. And I was so curious, I went to investigate and discovered that these were all prisoners on remand. They brought about six prisoners at a time into a room who had to stand in sort of like a box, like imagine a Punch and Judy sort of thing. And they stood with their head appearing at the top of the box, and their visitors had to stand behind a line, and they were so far away they had to shout to make themselves to have a conversation. But of course, if you've got six people all shouting at the same time, you've got a tremendous din. How they heard each other, I don't know. Anyway, thankfully A prison officer then came in and said, "Who is here to see the condemned?" And it was us, of course, because we were seeing a prisoner that was on death row, you know? So, of course, I kind of put my hand up and everybody looked round at us, you know, who are these people sort of thing. Anyway, Richmond and I were allowed to see him for, I think it was 10 minutes each. We couldn't go together. And then I had to walk behind this officer through the prison, through great clanging doors and, you know, into this room. But I mean, the advantage was there was just one box. There wasn't a crowd of people. And when they brought Brother George Constantine in to see me, you know, he had to be in this box and I had to talk to him at a distance. But it was, you know, it was relatively quiet. It was just a prison officer standing there who had to listen to me asking him about how things were. And you know, we had a chat about the truth. And how he managed to get his readings done and contact he was having the other brothers and sisters. And when Granny went in, she thought, well, I won't go over all that ground again. So she read him a psalm and had a bit of a chat with him. And I think I had a prayer with him as well before I left. So that was a pretty memorable experience. There's one other prison I went to, just while I'm talking about prisons, in Tanzania. Where we had a lot of correspondence courses in this prison, but it was difficult to get permission to go into it. So we had to kind of negotiate outside. And they said, we'd have to wait till the prison governor arrives. A prison officer stood with us outside, with a couple of local brethren. And I remember a Jeep pulling up and the driver went round and opened the passenger door and this man fell out onto the floor. And that the chap with us said, oh, that's the prison governor arriving. So I said, well, what's the matter with him? He said, well, he's drunk. So he was turning up to work completely drunk. So our attempts to negotiate entry were pretty futile. We hung around for a bit longer. And another thing I remember was a pickup truck coming out of the prison. And in the back of the pickup truck were what turned out to be, when you looked a bit more closely, dead bodies. Yeah, about 10 stiffs in the back of this pickup truck. And again, I said to the prison officer that was with us, you know, that looks a bit terrible. He said, oh, it's normal, quite normal. In fact, the prison was hugely overcrowded, probably terrible conditions inside. And about the only way they could sort of manage the prison population with the number coming in was to have a number going out. And that was one way they offloaded some of the prisoners. Yeah. So these are some of the things that you kind of experience when you're out in different places and you realise, you know, there's a stark difference often between what we're used to in Britain and what many, many people are used to in other parts of the world.
How do you kind of deal with the massive difference? Because I was talking to someone recently who was is planning on going to the Gambia, I think, God willing. And sort of it's his first trip to Africa and was kind of fairly apprehensive about what to expect. Like, how would you kind of suggest sort of dealing with the cultural differences?
I mean, it's like everything else. Once you're actually in the situation, you just get on with it, really, and learn to cope. But I think the important thing is to have an open mind. You know, don't expect that things are going to be the same as you're used to. Don't expect that things will be efficient, for example, particularly in Africa, but elsewhere as well. People have different concepts of time. You know, to us, if it's supposed to go at 10 o'clock, it's supposed to go at 10 o'clock. But if you're in Africa, 10 o'clock means roughly any time in the morning when you're ready, sort of thing. So just adjusting to the differences. I think, you know, just enjoy the difference, really, and relax. I mean, one thing I learned was that, you know, we get agitated, don't we, because something's late or isn't working properly or what have you, you know. Whereas there, you just relax. You'll get there in the end. Things will work out. And you start thinking, oh, God, how will they know the other end that we're going to be so late? But they won't mind because they're not expecting you to be on time. So they've got their own system of managing the fact that the bus might be a whole day late. They'll still be looking out for you and so on. It's much better now, of course, that mobile phones are pretty well universally available, so you can actually ring ahead. Once I was with a brother who did have had a mobile phone, it was one of the first ones, and he rang his girlfriend. Yeah, we were right in a remote part of town, and I had an upset tummy. I mean, it's kind of just have to expect that from time to time. And I think it was at breakfast. I felt dizzy and suddenly just conked out. And there was a bit of panic sort of thing. But we were staying in a kind of bungalow that was in the grounds of a hospital. They just let it out to make a bit of money. So I was able to see a doctor straight away, and they checked me out, and everything was perfectly all right. And, that was it. On we went sort of thing. But this brother rung his girlfriend to say that I had collapsed and mentioned that we were in a hospital. And so his girlfriend told a sister, and she rang Richmore and said, "Do you realise that Michael is seriously ill?
Oh, he's no.
He's collapsed and is in hospital." Well, of course, I had no idea this had happened, except the following evening, the brother said to me, "Oh, I've had a message back from my girlfriend." He said, I'm so sorry, but news has got to your wife about what happened. And she, so I thought, oh, no. So I said, "Well, you'll have to let me use your phone to get a message through." Then, of course, I couldn't get hold of Richmore. I managed to leave a message on your mum's phone to say, "Look, I am perfectly all right. I'm not in hospital." So communication can be challenging sometimes.
So I was going to ask, what is the kind of the day-to-day role in terms of, because obviously you get like a trip to Tanzania, which is a big thing, but like between trips, what kind of a thing do you have to do?
Right. So you mean like preparing for a trip or after a trip? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think preparing for a trip, I think it's good to read up about the country, to actually, sometimes I've been with people both in Europe and elsewhere, and you might as well be in Timbuktu. So I think it's good to find out about the country. There are good travel guides around to learn about it, take an interest in the country, because the people, the brothers and sisters, it's their country where they live. And if you're interested in it and have a bit of a expectation, then that's a good thing. So I would say read up some travel guides to the country. And the other thing to do, I know some people, feel they're absolutely hopeless at languages. But I mean, it's worth making the effort to try to learn some of the local language. Like in Tanzania, it's Swahili. Swahili is not a difficult language. And even if you just can get the basic greeting words, hello and goodbye and how are you, and that sort of thing, then people, they feel, instead of you coming in, as it were, that almost like a colonialist, if you know what I mean, sort of, "I'm the white man, you've got to speak English because I'm English," sort of thing. If you actually make an effort to use their language as much as you can, then I think they feel you're kind of being courteous, you're making a gesture towards them. And similarly with the Bible, I mean, a Swahili Bible is relative, you can read it and see where you are and get the. And so I found when I was giving talks, although the talks were being translated by a brother, when it came to quoting from the scriptures, then I used a Swahili Bible and I read it myself, and they appreciated that. So learn the language, find out about the country. And of course, the people worry about is, will I know enough about the Bible? That's what people often worry about. But actually, to be honest, anybody who's got a Christadelphian background sort of knows 1,000 times more about the Bible than 99.9% of the population, even in Africa, where they're much more familiar with the Bible than in the UK, regrettably. So don't worry about that. Obviously, it's good to perhaps read through, the basic doctrinal things and so forth, but you learn as you go. That's the best thing. And it doesn't matter if somebody asks you a question, you don't know the answer. Just say, I'll have to find out about that. And you won't be on your own. You'll be with somebody else almost certainly. And also the other thing is there are, most situations, think of Tanzania again, you're with other African brethren, as well as there might be some contacts that have come along out of curiosity. And it's nice to say to the African, what do you think? How would you answer that question? To involve them, to engage them. And it gets you off the hook, of course, if you couldn't think what to say. Or while they're saying what they're saying, gives you a bit of a chance to think and, and have a quick flick through and think, well, what can I add to that?
The other question that I wanted to ask was, would you say that doing mission work has impacted your faith? And how so?
Yeah, enormously. I think if I could just put a plug in for campaigning in this country, we still have Bible campaigns in this country, and we don't get as many younger people going on them, regrettably, as would be a good thing. And if young people can be encouraged to go on campaigns, there's nothing like having to actually talk to other people about your faith to reinforce it, to kind of make you realize actually it is a faith that means something, that works, that is true. And that's certainly the case, of course, when you go to places like Africa, where you're much more likely to meet people who are reasonably familiar with the Bible, although they'll probably only be familiar with certain sections. And that's another little tip. When people throw a passage at you and say, well, what do you, how, the thing to do is say, okay, let's have a look at it, all right? And if you look at the passage with them and read it through, and often the answer lies, if it's just an isolated verse, the answer lies in the context or in some verses nearby. What was the question? I've forgotten.
Well, the question was, how has mission work impacted your faith?
Oh, yeah, sure. I think the other thing is that you realise that you can manage on far less than you have now. In Africa, you've got people who don't have jobs. They brethren walk around all day and find somebody to take, carry this from here to here, and they earn a few shillings. And it's very hand to mouth, and they're sort of growing a few things in a bit of a chamber. It's called large allotment, and that's subject to all kinds of things that might attack the foods. So it's a hand to mouth existence, but actually they get by. And the other interesting thing is they're cheerful. They get by. They're closer to God because of that very situation. You're close to God when you're relying on so much that is part of the natural world around you. So I think you do learn in developing countries that, the essential things in life are not what we sometimes think are essential. And even within ecclesial life, within the truth, you realize the essence is about a response to the gospel of salvation, which is fundamentally fairly simple, and the hope of the coming kingdom of God. That's basically what it's all about. And the style of their ecclesial meetings will sometimes be a bit different, because obviously our meetings are within the context of a very English British tradition. It isn't like that, and it's no use getting fussed about it and making a big to-do. You just got to kind of accept that the essence is not those structural things. The essence is what's at the heart of the gospel. And I think
if you had a message to send to our listeners, who are a lot of them are younger people, like what would you want to say to them, to encourage them, to reassure them?
Yeah, well, what I would say is that, you know, it's a great adventure. Doing missionary work is a great adventure. It gets the adrenaline going. You know, there's a buzz about sort of trying to get it all fitting together, and when you're out there, you know, it's very interesting. So what I'd say to young people is, you know, go for it. You know, I mean, young people travel all over the world these for holidays. Well, why not take a trip which is more than a holiday? It's actually something which will be much more rewarding at a kind of, I'm not against holidays, but what I'm saying is, you know, if you go on a trip, it's as good as a holiday. And in my view, it's better than a holiday, because it's just so rewarding and satisfying. And, you know, all sorts of adventures take place, and it makes you trust. You know, you realize you're in the hands of God. And however difficult a situation may be, you've got to commit to God in prayer. In fact, when you were saying how do you prepare for a trip, I should have perhaps made a point of saying, obviously, you make it a matter of prayer. And when you're out there, you're acutely aware that you're dependent on, you know, on the hand of God. The angel of the Lord encamps around those that fear him. And you're very aware of that. And if you're in a situation that just you think, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this situation, just put it in God's hands and it will work out somehow or other. I'm sure I've said far too much.
Yeah. Well, many thanks for that, Brother Michael. It was very interesting. I'm sure you agree. The advice there is sound. You know, we shouldn't be daunted about these trips that we go on. I myself, when I first went on a trip, well, you know, it's in the same boat. Like, I'm unsure about what was going to happen. But as you said, you just work it out as you're there, while you're there. And it all works out well, as you know, it's all in God's hands.
Thanks. We're not going to go into loads of details in terms of news from around the world in this episode. That's mainly because it's really difficult to keep up to date with the fast-moving situations, and particularly the situation in the Ukraine. Details of our brothers and sisters there are being circulated via the news bulletin that your recording brother is able to email you. So we would advise you to just keep reading those. Of course, we continue to pray for their safety and that they may be able to hold fast to the hope of coming peace in God's kingdom during the difficulties they're suffering.
Lots of interesting news, including the news of various baptisms and Bible schools that have happened from all over the world recently, can be found in the Bible Missionary Magazine, which is published every quarter, can be found at the cbm.org.uk.
We'd also like to remind you of ways that you can get involved with the CBM. As we heard in our last episode, you could sign up to be a tutor at This Is Your Bible.
You could do your Amazon shopping at smile.amazon.uk, and a percentage of what you pay will be given to the CBM at no extra cost to you.
You could join an online Zoom Breaking of Bread meeting. Go to cbm.org.uk and then to resources for a list of links to those.
Or you could register as a field worker or contact a member of the CBM Council via the website to register your interest in going on upcoming trips.
Or you could get your ecclesia or maybe a group of friends together to fund a Project Aid project, details of which can also be found on the website. For example, the one I found most interesting recently was you could fund ceiling fans for a newly built ecclesial hall in Gerihun in Sierra Leone.
So many thanks again for listening. May God bless you wherever you are. And we're just going to finish with these words from Isaiah 42. Thus saith God the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it, he that giveth bread unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. I am the Lord, and that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another.